Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Welcome back to Classic Business here on Fine Music Radio. And in a world where we've seen passive and index tracking funds eating the active industry's lunch and fee pressure is being relentless, 91 has just reported a very solid set of interim numbers, record assets under management, a return to net inflows, and an improvement in margins, all while plowing money into technology and new markets as well. Joining me now to unpack the results, the outlook, and the future is 91 CEO Hendrik du Toit. Hendrik, good to have you back on Classic Business. Let's just start with the headline story there. AUM at record levels. We've seen net inflows of over £4 billion, double-digit growth in adjusted earnings. In your own words, what kind of half year was this for 91? Is it a cyclical bounce on the back of better markets or proof that something more structural has shifted in your favor?
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure speaking to you and your listeners. No, it's a continuation of what we signaled last at year end, where we said we, for the first time in a while, moved back to positive flows and a sense that the industry is receiving more attention, that demand is growing from clients. And this has continued during this half year. We've had obviously very supportive equity markets. And the surprise in the package was how well actually South Africa as a market and emerging markets have done in terms of relative to developed markets, which of course given helped our book to grow. But it's still a fiercely competitive industry with, you know, the necessary pressures. And we at the moment on the cusp of major technology change, which we need to be prepared for.
What surprised you about that local, let's start there, that local JSE performance this year? If you look in dollar terms, we're up almost 50% year to date. I know platinum and gold counters have done a lot of the heavy listing, but when you look underneath the hood, what surprised you about that?
And that has been done without sort of significant foreign participation. So we think this is now going to attract. And China was the same. China didn't do as well as South Africa, but also had a very strong 6 months. And, you know, nothing attracts interest like momentum, price momentum. So we expect more. But what surprised us was we were pretty bullish. We were kind of local as lacquer people in the sense that we did a major transaction in South Africa where we invested 5 billion rand back into South Africa a year ago into the Sanlam investment management business, which we acquired from Sanlam. So we were clearly optimistic about South African asset prices as opposed to the economy and how the country was acquitting itself of the task of developing into a better, more sophisticated economy. So you should distinguish those two.
Yeah,
I think where the positive surprise was is the excellent discipline the National Treasury was able to apply in the country's finances, and the governor of the central bank almost single-handedly driving us towards that 3% inflation target, which has now been recognized by markets. So this creates the space for the South African authorities or South Africa Inc. to reinvent itself. We haven't done it yet. We've just created the space.
Yeah, important distinction that. And let's just stay on the biggest monetary policy change that we've seen in two decades, anchoring the inflation target now at 3% with 1% either side. I mean, because that's lower nominal GDP growth in the short term. And that does complicate debt stabilization because you've got a slower nominal GDP that makes the debt ratio harder to reduce. You know, and do you think we can achieve that? Firstly, also given the drivers coming from administered prices.
I think, firstly, that was the Minister of Finance's concern with the target. Remember, there was a bit of an argument between the various authorities.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the hard target won the day, and I think correctly so. I think it is achievable. Where it would be difficult to achieve is if our economy starts growing fast and hits constraints, supply constraints, bottlenecks. Right. And remember, our infrastructure is not in the best shape. Remember, we lose a lot of the skilled people we produce to immigration. We don't have a market yet open to bringing foreign talent in at the pace we will need if we grow fast. We still have a lack of clarity around what I would call I wouldn't say property rights like the Trump government saying, but in around the clarity of where BEE policy will go, where local ownership requirements will go. And I think the quicker we clear those and we allow capital to come in at terms it understands, and we invest and build our local talent pool, but also remain open, which I think, you know, the Minister of Home Affairs has done a very good job recently, but remain open, bringing in international talent. And what the Minister of Finance said in his speech, or when he was questioned after his budget speech, protecting the middle class, make sure our middle class can work and be productive and employ the unemployed. I think we can do it, but those are a lot. Those are many ifs I've mentioned. And then the final one is, can the country deal with the issues around criminality and corruption? You know, we again saw SARS tell us there is 40 billion of uncollected taxes in the cigarette business. Now, why can't we collect those? You know, why can't we make sure we operate in a more effective way and avoid criminals from ransacking the national treasury? I think we've got to deliver on those, and those are not done yet.
Yeah, very important to realize there's still lots of work that needs to be done, while recognizing that there has been some progress. You know, three consecutive fiscal surpluses, getting off the FATF grey list, that S&P ratings upgrade with a positive outlook, all indications of that. I want to stay on the policy environment for a second longer, though, because, I mean, you mentioned reframing the discussion around BEE, for example, and the window of opportunity seems to be open. There was a very powerful piece by Fani Titi, the CEO of Investec, that really helped to reset a debate that's drifted into false binaries here. I mean, he calls for value for money procurement, merit-based appointments, broad employee ownership, and a modernized equity equivalence model. It's exactly the kind of pragmatic redesign that could turn what is seen as a drag into a catalyst for growth. Do you think we're maturing enough to have that kind of debate in South Africa from where you sit, Hendrik? And do you think government is open to having that kind of debate?
Well, I firstly want to commend Fani for a very brave and very thoughtful contribution to the national debate, and very balanced one. And secondly, I want to say I'm all for inclusive growth. And therefore, to me, transformation means giving every South African a fair chance. It doesn't mean give a few South Africans a great chance. It means giving every South African a fair chance, whatever color, creed, race, background they come from. And of course, trying to address some of the injustices in the past. But we have to be very clear and simple. And I think Fani's framework is one which, if I were in government, I'd seriously think of adopting. And it's not an anti-BE. I think BE played an important role in broadening participation, or at least creating examples for people that you can make it if you come from a black community. And Fani is an example of that. I mean, he grew up on a farm in the Eastern Free State, and his father drove a tractor.
Yeah.
And look what he's achieved. So I think, but we're at the stage where all models evolve, all models have to be made fit for purpose. And I think we need to have that national debate. And I'm so delighted that we're having it in a very civilized way in South Africa right now, not in a name-calling way. And that should continue. But we really should just align behind the fact that we now have an opportunity. And the real opportunity is that capital is starting to diversify from, and that's why our business feels a bit better also with wind in its sails, is capital is starting to diversify from a single trade, which is going to North America, going long the index and the dollar. Okay, that is now shifting. It's looking around the world, and it's looking for, you know, call it diversified performance or diversified investment opportunities and uncorrelated growth opportunities. And that is where a country like South Africa, a continent like Africa, can really step up. I mean, the Nigerians have been stepping up by reforming themselves very significantly. And you can see the benefit that's come to them as well. So yeah, it's not just South Africa, but we have a moment that we mustn't waste.
It helps when your president is a former central banker, and Tinubu really understands capital markets, yes, as well as he does. When we look at the 91 investment engine, it is phenomenal. I mean, roughly three quarters of your assets are outperforming over 1, 3, and 5 years. Yeah. It's not what we see across the active industry. In a world where everyone says alpha is dead, what is working inside 91's investment engine right now that you think is genuinely different and repeatable at scale?
I think, Michael, the one thing is we keep at what we're good at. We don't chop and change a lot. And our portfolio managers were focused on the task at hand, not thinking up all sorts of other things while the world was tough for us. And they've stuck to and improved well-tested, well-honed processes. And particularly on the global equity side, we've had a really good run. And, you know, we keep people at their jobs, doing their work, supported by technology for a long time. So we also got experience not to get rattled when markets are against us. And I must congratulate the investment team for the way they've come through.
Yeah, it really is exceptional performance. You've expanded the operating margin slightly, despite some fee pressure and obviously rising costs that you're investing in new technology. Yeah. How repeatable is that operating leverage from here? Do you see yourself as in a more structurally higher margin rate, or are there investment and tech spend lines still to come through that could bite into profitability?
No, I think we're comfortable that if you noticed, our average assets under management have been a lot lower than our closing assets under management, because the markets really had the biggest part of the run towards the end of the period. So we're going into the second half with a much higher book than we had on average in the first half. And I think we should start seeing some benefit of the technology investment, which is all through the cost line. So I don't see a huge expense rise. And in fact, our operating expenses have been well controlled. Where the expenses went up is where we gave people inflationary increases, et cetera. And as inflation comes down in our core markets, that's also in our favor. So I'm not too worried about that. Where we have a challenge is for very large mandates, and we serve very large institutions from around the world, is they are very, very fee sensitive. We're not price cutters, but, you know, in the end, they will tell you they can go at that price, otherwise they can't go. And then you have to make a decision whether they're a client you really want or not. And particularly if they're existing client, upweighing the portfolio, you need to give them some benefits. So I think that's where we will have our work cut out. But in terms of actually seeing opportunity and pipeline, we are pretty comfortable as we look forward.
And actively managed ETFs, another opportunity and route to market as well. Every asset manager today is also talking about private markets, private credit, infrastructure, all of that. Where do you see the best risk-adjusted growth opportunity for 91 now?
I think, again, you got to differentiate between the opportunity for 91 and where to invest. So where the best opportunity for us is in the areas where we well develop and where clients can scale our strategies. In other words, where they will add more flow or more money to what we already do and where we've paid the cost. And that's obviously in our core international public markets business, which is our biggest part of our business in South Africa, where we have a real scale opportunity. I think on the private credit side, we are still developing a business, and a lot of what we get in terms of new revenues, we will reinvest. But it's the internationalization of the North American capital pool, which is really the big one and goes on top. But from a client point of view, I would, you know, just an ordinary, as an investor, I think equity markets are a lot higher. One must start being discerning. One must move towards quality. I think some of the sort of exuberant high growth investments have probably run their course. And then in some of the emerging markets, particularly China, there's a whole generation of new companies, especially growth companies, being created, given the fact that they are developing their own tech stack independently. And I wouldn't be chasing AI hype. I would be implementing AI in the business, but not chasing AI hype with my dollar.
No, there's a lot of money flowing. The capex into that space, Hendrik, I mean, that's the big talking point in markets at the moment. The EBITDA you've got to achieve to justify that capex seems absolutely insane.
Exactly. And you've got to stand back. And the real opportunity will be like the internet boom. When the market corrects after this bull phase, If you can then pick the winners cheaply, you're going to do really well for the next 10 or 20 years. But remember, those AI bulls, there's quantum coming. That'll have an impact on the AI guys again. So, you know, we're living in a world of shorter cycles of innovation, and we've got to be very careful to project too many years ahead in terms of with certainty, because that is not possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously growth for the business coming from scaling that global public market franchise. But for investors, as you say, you know, looking for those opportunities as those cycles shorten as well. We'll have to leave it there. Hendrik du Toit, thank you very much. CEO of 91 coming to us from London, but he'll be in South Africa soon for the G20.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate the discussion.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice and impact.